Hey guys, welcome to the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. I'm Kevin Estella, Director of Training. I'm recording this here in North Carolina at our awesome Firebase where we got all sorts of really, really good training coming up. Guys, just a heads up, if you're interested in training, we have land navigation coming up October 21st and December 2nd. We also have a really badass guest instructor series coming up. And one of the guys who's coming is actually a good friend of ours, someone that you've heard probably on the podcast, Aaron Snyder. He is going to be out here in November. So please, please check those out. But what I want to do is I just want to recognize our sponsors that make this podcast possible. And the sponsors for this podcast are Sig Sauer and Vertex. So let's talk about Sig Sauer. Guys, I am a Sig Sauer junkie. I shoot a lot of different firearms. I've collected a lot over the years, and I've trained up at the Sig Sauer Academy. If you were to ask me right now, what Sig pistols do I have within arm's reach? I'm going to tell you it's my Sig 365 XL, which actually started as just like the standard 365. A lot of people don't know that you can buy the additional grip modules and longer slides and all sorts of accessories for it. So with a few different parts, you can swap back and forth between a full size, well, I should say a longer slide subcompact pistol with a 12 round capacity, 15 round capacity, and then they make some mags that are even larger than that. You can go from that to a compact pistol, which you can easily carry inside of a pocket with a good holster that protects that trigger guard and nothing else in your pocket. So guys, I'm a huge fan of my Sig 365, and one that I'm looking forward to getting back into, a pistol that I regret selling, was my Sig 220, but I've got a hookup for one. I'm going to be buying one again very, very soon. And that is going to be my dedicated suppressor host for my Sig SRD 45. It is such a fantastic suppressor. Sig has some great folks over in their suppressor division, John Hollister being one of them. And 45 is the caliber that was meant to be suppressed. A lot of people talk about 10 mil. Well, 45 is like 11.5 mil and it's already subsonic. So it makes a great suppressor round. And the Sig 220 classic line with the SRD 45 is going to be badass. So guys, please check out Sig. They're a great, great friend of ours and one of our sponsors. The other sponsor for this podcast is Vertex. Vertex has been making clothes for quite some time. Vertex is actually making our brand new Recce shirt, which it's a really, really smart design. And Vertex clothing is what I am the most familiar with. I have some other Vertex products, like some of their Tactigami and, you know, some of their mag pouches and things like that. But I've got a pair of Vertex pants that I cannot destroy. I've mentioned on previous podcasts that I've had them since December of 2016. And I wore them on the History Channel. I've worn them as a survival instructor. I've beaten the crap out of them. And they're still going. So Vertex pants are fantastic. I have some Vertex socks. Their clothing line is tough as nails. And I would highly, highly recommend that you guys check them out. Some of our folks that work for Fieldcraft are running Vertex long gun bags that actually hold things like the Sig MCX with the folding stock, or the Sig MPX and things like that. But Vertex, they're good folks over there. I've met them. They've been at the trade shows. And they've got some pretty cool, very forward-thinking designs. So please check them out. But guys, this podcast is going to be awesome. So one more time, so we can just get right to it. Please check out Sig. That's www.sigsauer.com. Please check out their training academy, Sig Sauer Academy. And please check out Vertex. That's VERTX.com. And you'll see some of the stuff that you know, we've been working on them with, including that Recce shirt. Okay, it's time to get this podcast. Here we go.
All right, hey guys, welcome to Fieldcraft Survival Jiu-Jitsu Podcast with me, your host, Greg Lappin, and our guest, Professor Greg Anderson, who you guys know from the Endless Endeavor Podcast. But that was professional.
That was two Gregs, one cup.
Two Gregs. Well, two mics, but we had one spoon. Shared dessert last night. We man grapple, man wrestling, sweating each other. So this weekend was the grand opening for the new Fieldcraft Survival headquarters in Provo, Utah. We had a jiu-jitsu seminar on the brandly new laid out mats and subfloor Friday evening with Greg. Awesome turnout. It only got put up like a week in advance, and we had 13 people plus a couple of guests that came in. Mm-hmm. Three black belts on the mat, three brown belts on the mat, three purple belts on the mat, a few blue belts, and then some brand new white belts.
I didn't really know what to expect leading into that, but now that I kind of reflect on it, that would make sense because this is not yet an established academy.
Right.
You don't have that army of white belts. So really, who was showing interest in that?
Other jiu-jitsu guys.
Other jiu-jitsu guys.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So the people that made a point to come out and partake in that first training session, in that first seminar, are people that are already immersed in the jiu-jitsu lifestyle.
They're already bought off. They're already sold.
And, you know, and we got a couple guys that were brand new that was kind of their introduction.
Yeah.
But, you know, out of the gates, I didn't really know what to expect because a lot of times at a traditional jiu-jitsu academy, if I hosted one at mine or you hosted one at yours, we'd have 65 people.
Oh, yeah, at least. Yeah.
And so there was a part of me that's wondering, well, how big will this be? But I guess standing up an academy, and that's the first training session, you know, that was actually a pretty good turnout.
It was pretty rad. I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, grand opening was awesome. Amazing energy, the vibe, the opening kind of ceremony, Mike giving his speech, super articulate and just authentic, you know, authentic, passionate.
And his ability to capture people's emotions is a fucking gift.
Oh, it's huge.
You know,
it's huge.
And it's, you know, it's, that's obviously something that you learn over time, becoming comfortable standing up in front of the crowd, but he still has something that you can't quite put your finger on, and it draws people to him.
He's got that Sergeant Major vibe, but now he's translated it into civilian usage.
Yeah.
You know? But it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with the word authentic, because he was very open about it. He's like, yeah, Fieldcraft is a business. I'm an entrepreneur. I want to make money. I need to support my family, and all that's cool. But that's what he worries about on the back end.
Right.
What he worries about on the front end is building a business that brings people together, that builds capability, makes our community strong. And like he said, we don't want to be reliant on anyone but ourselves.
And I think people lose sight. It's the same thing like your jiu-jitsu academy, my jiu-jitsu academy in Louisiana, this new jiu-jitsu academy here at Fieldcraft is a business. It does need to make money. It does need to pay for you, your family, your home, your food, your expenses. It needs to pay for me, my family, my home, my food, feed my kids, you know. And even beyond that, it's a business, and businesses should be successful.
Yeah.
So if you're making money and you get to go buy a nice car because of it, good on you. But the difference is we're not running a business at the detriment of other people or society. We're running a business at the freaking, you know,
the betterment of society.
Society. We are building we are helping people build themselves into better people and building a better society while making money doing it.
Of course.
And I think a lot of times people shame those who make money.
Well, people shame those that make money for a couple of different reasons. I think A, they're not making money themselves. So, you know, it's poor me syndrome.
Right.
But then B, like, the powers to be have kind of demonized becoming rich and wealthy.
Yeah.
Like if you say someone is rich, a middle class or like somebody that's in poverty immediately has like a negative perception of them. They're an evil rich person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where in all reality, like, you know, we literally just talked about this an hour ago over lunch. If you're rich and you generate a lot of wealth, you can do good things with that.
That's right.
Or you can do shitty things with that.
You can be a good person or a shitty person.
And so, if you already said it, if you make a bunch of money because you opened a successful business and now you can drive a car that you've always wanted, that's fucking cool, man.
Yeah.
There's nothing to be shamed about that.
Absolutely.
You know, I really appreciate Mike bringing us in and giving us the opportunity, because one thing that he talked about with us, I mean, what was it, in March or something?
March, yeah.
When we came out here and we were hanging out in his house.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I teach a lot of things. You know, a firearm guy, Fieldcraft teaches all kinds of preparedness, medical preparedness, canning, jarring, shooting, vehicle loadouts, all kinds of stuff. And he goes, but the one thing that we don't have is how to defend yourself with your own physical body.
Right.
And he goes, and then it's in the actual
fitness.
Yeah.
And now he's got it.
In the foundation of preparedness, if you can't fight and you don't have the physical capacity to be able to, if I needed to pick you up and run for 500 meters to an extraction vehicle, right, I know that I could do that. You know, I could do that for you, right, and vice versa. Right. And if you can't do that, there's a conversation to have.
No, for sure.
And it's an important starting point for the preparedness lifestyle.
Well, and Mike said it yesterday during his opening speech, and he said, I'm building out this place to better this community.
Yeah.
To better you. And we can do all the EDC stuff and carry guns and go to the shoot house courses and the shooting courses and the vehicle courses. He's like, but if you're fat, I'm going to tell you you're fat.
As your friend.
As your friend.
Yeah.
And as a mentor. And we're not saying you're fat, like fat shame. We're saying you're fat because you're out of shape, you're unhealthy, and you're incapable of surviving in a life or death situation.
And not only surviving, but you fall into one of two categories in any type of like traumatic experience. You are either an asset or a liability.
That's right.
You are, and there's plenty of people that if my house was burning down and I needed help, I would rather they just stay the fuck away and not even get in the way.
You're
because
gonna
it's going to, yeah,
worse.
It's going to be harder dealing with them.
That's right.
You know, I did I was asked to do a guest speaking engagement. You know, it was probably a year ago now.
At your old unit, right?
What's that?
Up at your old
unit. No. This was just at a local, like this local pub that everybody was getting together and they were defying lockdowns at the time. And so that's where everybody would go to like share information and talk about things. And I was asked to be a guest speaker one night, and being a pub, they're serving alcohol. And so I'm standing up in the microphone in front of, I don't know, 85 people or something. And they're all drinking beer, which is fine. I drink beer too sometimes, but a lot of them were out of shape. A lot of them were overweight. And I said straight up to the entire crowd, I said, listen, guys, we can talk about, you know, how we're going to stand up against tyranny and how we're going to come save the day and protect our children and protect our families. I said, but if there's a man in this room and that can't set their beer on the table and walk out front, and right across is the community trail. It's called the Centennial Trail, and it runs for 35 miles through Snohomish County outside of Seattle. I said, if anyone in this room can't hop on the Centennial Trail with me and go for a 2-mile run, you're not ready to protect shit.
Right.
You're not ready to defend a fucking thing. I'm not trying to be a dick, but
that's the reality.
This is the reality of it. A 2-mile run is something that every man on planet Earth should be. And I'm not saying you need to blast it in fucking 12 minutes.
No.
I mean, we're in our 40s now. And I haven't ran in a while because I got jiu-jitsu knees.
Running promotes cowardism.
But if I needed to run for 10 miles right now, I know that I could.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
And it's because we have the physical and mental capacity to do it.
Everything is shut down and EMP killed all the vehicles, yep, and your home's 20 miles away. Well, guess what? I'm grabbing my dog, I'm grabbing my backpack, and we're fucking jogging and running and walking and jogging and running and walking 20 fucking miles to my home. And I know I can do it at a pretty decent pace, even though I haven't done it in years.
Right now.
Right the fuck now.
And the reason that we know we could do that is because we've invested in ourselves enough over the years and put ourselves through those kind of arduous tasks to know not only do you have the physical capacity to do it, but you have the mental capacity to do it too.
Oh, we still live that hard life.
Well, and that's exactly why Mike decided to bring jiu-jitsu and fitness into the Fieldcraft headquarters, because it is the foundation.
It's the foundation. And to kind of bring back to that, you know, not even talking about like self-defense or, you know, shit hits the fan, the, you know, catastrophe, civil unrest. A few years back, I took my family on a cross-country trip in my built-out Land Rover, almost entirely off-road. I planned it for a month and a half. And as soon as we got into like North Texas, we were on farm roads, service roads, fire roads, state park road, like all off road. And a lot of the data that I had was out of date. So where we were supposed to turn, like at a gas stop where I was like, oh, we might need gas here, I can get on the road, get gas, it was blocked off. Mm-hmm. You got to adjust. And I remember specifically, we were on this one trail in New Mexico, and every turn that we were supposed to kept taking had been bulldozed over and blocked off. And we just kept going and kept going. And my kids are like, Dad, are we lost? I was like, yeah, a little bit. Well, what happens? Nothing. We're just going to keep going. Because I had extra fuel. I had extra water for them to live for days at a time. I had my fridge in the back with food for them to live. And guess what? I had a sat phone in my own 2 feet. So if shit completely hit the fan, ran out of all our gas, I could leave them at like a rendezvous and leave them there. Obviously I had guns, right? Mm-hmm. So I could leave them there and I could go walk my ass up to the top of the mountain to get a satellite reception on a sat phone or walk my ass into town to get help, you know, because of that base level fitness. And, you know, like Mike said, you know, bringing jiu-jitsu into field craft, in my opinion, it's really like the prerequisite to everything else.
I think it is. I think it is the foundation for literally everything else of having a preparedness mindset. And it's like, you know, Mike will talk about it often, but there are people that still perceive having a preparedness mindset as someone that lives in fear, somebody that is trying to combat fear. And it's actually the opposite of that. If you invest in yourself and you do develop these capabilities, now you don't experience that fear anymore, because you know if something were to happen, we now have options.
Absolutely.
And guys, let me be very clear. When I'm telling people to invest in jiu-jitsu, it's not because you might get in a fight one day and you might need to defend yourself. Will it be applicable there? 1,000%. And will it work? I promise you it'll work. But it's so much bigger than that. It's not that you may get in a fight one day. It's that you know how to deal with discomfort. You know how to deal with emotions. You know how to deal with like those hormonal dumps.
How to persevere through incredible adversity.
Yeah. And you get those big adrenaline dumps and just trying to deal with situations that aren't going your way. It teaches you to problem solve while simultaneously being in a very, very, very uncomfortable position. Most people, their default is panic when you get put in an uncomfortable position. And so it's a tool to hone your mind to face adversity with a sense of clarity at the same time.
Right.
And for people that are listening that haven't experienced this, they might think it's bullshit what we're talking about, but come in and let someone put neon belly on you and smother your face. And now figure out what to do.
Yeah, exactly. And stay calm, don't panic.
And a lot of people, their default setting, and to tell you the truth, I don't remember what my default setting was because I've been doing this for over 20 years now. But it's like
my default setting, if I remember, was literally just because we came from that lifestyle.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you don't fucking stop, you don't quit, you don't give up, you know? Yeah. And my default setting was like, I'm just not going to tap. And if I pass out, I pass out. Fuck.
Yeah.
You know, like it is what it is. And then you overcome it eventually. Then you learn how to defend it and all that stuff. And again, you know, for the people out there, you know, a lot of people say, oh, jiu-jitsu, well, I don't want to go to the ground in a fight, blah, blah, blah. And I actually had this conversation over this weekend with someone who came to the open house.
Neither do I.
No. And that's what I said. Neither do I.
Yeah.
You know, and here's the thing, you know, like, there are a lot of good forms of self-defense. If you're a really, really good boxer, you can probably defend yourself with only boxing.
Yep. If you're a really good Muay Thai fighter.
If you're a really good Muay Thai fighter.
Very good.
Very good. You know, like if you're a really, really, really seasoned practitioner of Krav Maga, maybe, you know. Like,
whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold whoa, on.
All right, let's not go that far. But what I'm saying is like all these sports that I've just listed, you know, when you spar, you never spar 100%. Maybe short of like the highest, highest level fighters. And they bring in dudes strictly to beat up.
Yeah.
You know? But that's not sustainable. That is not sustainable, especially as you get older. You're you know, a cook baker, a candlestick maker. You sit in an office during the day. That is not a sustainable way to train. Mm-hmm. You will break your body and you will stop training. Jiu-jitsu, you can train virtually 100% every day.
Yep.
And if you catch me, I tap and you let go. If I catch you, you tap and I let go. And we can maintain that. So you build this adversity, this hardness, this toughness that the other martial arts don't give you. You don't get the same. And I've studied other martial arts, guys. I've done traditional Japanese martial arts. I've done Muay Thai. I've done boxing. I've wrestled. I've done all this stuff. It is not the same. It is not the same doing Krav Maga fucking, you know, katas basically at 50% speed and
well, you
know,
and that's
not the same.
That's what I was going to say, because I've also fought MMA. I've right. taken cage fights. I've done a lot of stand up, a lot of wrestling. And while all that stuff is good, I still believe in jiu-jitsu as the number one foundational pillar of self-defense for exactly what you said. It's sustainable. And what you guys need to realize is the sustainability of something is key, because you're not going to win a fight. I tell people their jiu-jitsu is going to save them one of two ways. The first way it's going to save them is anyone that's looking to victimize someone is going to scan and check you out. And then they're going to scan right by you because you are now a hard target.
Yeah.
You walk differently. You look differently. If you got cauliflower ears, that's a plus.
Yeah.
But most, and I say that half jokingly, what I'm really talking about is the energy you project to your environment. They're looking for the weakest link. And if you have 2 years of training, you're the furthest thing.
You're furthest thing from the weakest,
link. Yeah. The other thing that jiu-jitsu is going to help you with in a self-defense scenario, it might not be a fucking rolling Kimura back take. You know what I mean? It teaches you the ability to scramble in real time and outposition people.
For sure.
If you can outposition another human being, 9 times out of 10, you win that fight.
Well, this is what I, you know, and this is kind of what I said to the gentleman who was talking to me. He's like, I'm really interested in the self-defense aspects of jiu-jitsu. I said, cool, then come join.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu is self-defense.
That's I don't want that sport stuff.
But I don't want to go, I said, you just need to grapple. Just trust me. Yes. Trust the process. You just need to grapple. And I said, I've used more jiu-jitsu in real world fights, altercations, uses of force, than anything else, than punching someone, than hitting someone, than drawing my pistol. I've used more jiu-jitsu than anything. And you know how many times I've actually gone to the ground? Like
hardly any.
1% of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And, same, bro. Especially because you and I both have a pretty extensive resume in law enforcement. So that gives you lots of opportunities to employ jiu-jitsu. And you can just grab a fucking standing, like an underhook into a standing Kimura, down to a knee on belly, and now they're in a cuffing position.
That's right, exactly. And for a civilian,
that's jiu-jitsu.
And that's jiu-jitsu, for sure. And if you're a civilian and you're not cuffing someone, you can do that and then separate and run away.
And run away.
Or separate and draw. And we're having a conversation, and you know, he was like talking about striking and boxing. I was like, cool, I'm going to take your vote to box me away. The second I'm either too far away for you to hit me, or too close for you to land a punch. And I said, I'm going to grab
you. Boxing is a gentleman's agreement.
It's a gentleman's agreement. That's right. Stand in that distance. And I think Joao said it, man, if there was no referee, there'd be no boxing, because they throw one or two punches and then they hug each other and they're in the clinch.
That's right.
And they hold on to each other until the ref separates them.
And that's not taking anything away from boxing.
No, and boxing's great. And I think people should know how to strike. And I think people should know what it feels like to get hit. But I told the guy, I said, look, I'm going to grab you and I'm going to osotogari you onto the ground, and the fight's going to be over. And I did that to a guy once.
Uh-huh.
Like, I did it. I did on the street, use of force, osotogari to dude, and done. Hit his head on the concrete, knocked out, unconscious. Fight was over immediately. And he's like, well, what about my six friends? I said, well, one, you're hanging out with six friends that are all going to beat me up.
Let's just go over the fucking what if scenario.
Right.
We could stand here for the next 6 weeks.
Exactly. Well, I told him, I said, so what's going to happen is, I didn't say I'm going to the ground. I said, I'm smashing you into the concrete, into the earth as hard as you can, and you're going to be out. And then I'm going to turn and shoot your six friends.
Yeah.
That's jiu-jitsu too. You know, just because I practice jiu-jitsu doesn't mean I can't punch. Doesn't mean I don't carry a gun.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean all the other shit. Right. But I grapple for a living.
Yeah.
You know, and I always tell people, like, well, I don't want to go to the ground in a fight. Well, cool. Do you know how to not go to the ground? Because if I put my hands on you, you don't have a choice.
Well, and also, you don't want to go to a ground in a fight? Start training jiu-jitsu.
That's right.
Because in both of our academies and this academy, every round starts on its feet.
That's right.
And outside, I mean, I know exactly who can take me down.
Right.
And you got to be a collegiate wrestler to get me to the ground these days.
Yeah.
Outside of that, there's a 0% chance you're taking me down.
That's right.
Like, you know, like I have plenty of guys that are good, that were good high school wrestlers. But if you take high school wrestling season is 3.5 months, right? So all through high school, they have a year of training. Mm-hmm. If you're a blue belt and you train in an academy like we have, that's all 4 years of high school wrestling.
That's right.
Because we teach double legs. We teach single legs. We teach sprawling and defense.
Every week you're learning a new takedown. And then when we spar, we start standing.
Yep.
And if you want to wrestle and take each other down, cool. You know, if you want to pull guard, that's fine too. But you better pull guard. Like, it's an attack as well.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to shame you a little bit. But let's be honest, I've been pulling guard a lot lately because my neck hurts.
Well, and again, the sport side of jiu-jitsu, because I was teaching Baron Bolo at my academy last week, and you commented on one of the videos. He goes, oh, you teach that sport stuff, huh? And that comment got some likes. And I was like, oh, these people obviously don't understand. You're being sarcastic.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
Because again, you know, I'm not going to Baron Bolo someone on concrete, But if you think that if the Mendez brothers got their hands on you,
Mikey Musumeci,
that's what I'm saying,
would kill.
Yeah.
95% of grown men, you know,
probably 99.9% of grown men, you know,
with sport jiu-jitsu because he grapples for a living.
So now that Fieldcraft Jiu-Jitsu is officially open,
tomorrow
is the first. Hey, if you're a if you are a member, start coming to class. Wait, I'm not the host. Why am I asking questions?
Yeah, ask away, dude.
Talk me through what people can expect from Fieldcraft Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, so Fieldcraft Jiu-Jitsu is officially open on the website. If you go to the Utah Training Center, which is HQ, you click on that. There's a link for you to register and sign up for Jiu-Jitsu. We are doing, it's a regular Jiu-Jitsu Academy, daily classes, morning, noon, and night. It's a monthly membership fee, and you can sign up online. We're doing two different types of registrations. We're doing a tier two registration, which is our standard registration. And that registration gets you a white Fieldcraft gi, a belt and a t-shirt, or you can pay a little bit more for the tier one registration that gets you the gi, belt, t-shirt, and also includes the black multicam, rash guard, fight shorts for your no-gi stuff, and a Fieldcraft duffel bag. So you get everything that you need. And then you train. We're doing our schedules online on the website. We're doing kids classes from 4 to 6 years old. We're doing bigger kids classes from 7 to 12, and then our adult classes. We're doing 5:45 a.m. classes for the early birds.
Ugh.
I know. Ugh. I'm gonna have to find like a good purple belt that likes to get up early in the morning.
Good luck.
I don't know. I may have one if you like to end up early, Hunter. No, but I mean, obviously, I'll be teaching everything in the beginning, but early morning classes, lunch classes every day at noon, pretty much, and then evening classes pretty much every evening, and then a Saturday class, and it's gonna be run like a regular jiu-jitsu academy. We got a sprung subfloor, high quality Fuji mats. We're waiting on our wall pads still. Unfortunately, they were back ordered, so those should be coming this week. We're going to adhere to a pretty strict uniform policy. I spoke with Mike pretty heavily about this, and he and I are on the same page that you're part of a team. So just like when you go into the Army, you go to Ranger Battalion, you go to your ODA, you go to your SIF and you get your stuff. You know, it's like everyone's in the same camis. Everyone's wearing the same stuff, and you share that everyone's wearing the same patch. Unit patch, you know, and you're part of a team. So we're going to maintain that here. So
you guys hate diversity.
Exactly. Hate it.
So no Hunter orange geese.
No orange geese, no red geese. We are allowing white and blue geese for under purple belt. Purple belt and above can now wear black geese. So black, blue, and white. So
oh, okay.
The IBJJF.
Interesting. Yeah.
So the IBJJF allowable colors. And that's kind of how I was brought up, that I was not allowed to wear a black gi until I got my purple belt.
I didn't know that.
Which I kind of like.
I didn't know that was a thing.
I don't know if it's a thing or like if it was just a thing. What's that?
I don't really like black gis.
I love black gis. I do. White or black.
Yeah.
White or black. And that's what you'll see me in. And I don't love one more than the other. Obviously, I'm a bit of a traditionalist. And you know, when I travel and visit another academy, I always travel with a white gi regardless. But I kind of liked it because black geese were like kind of cool and murdered out and like, yeah, black gee.
And they don't get dingy.
They don't get dingy. And then only purple belts are above were wearing black geese. And those are the killers in the gym. You know, it's like, I mean, I remember coming up being a white and blue belt. I didn't care about the black belts. The black belts were unachievable. The black belts were unattainable. The black belt was your professor. You had so much respect. And it was like, he was like a god of men, you know? But the purple belts.
I'm coming
for
you.
They were scary, bro. The purple belts were scary. They were the enforcers. And I was like, I could get there one day, but I'm scared of this dude, you know?
You know, the day I got my purple belt was just kind of a spur of the moment thing. Because I was a blue belt, obviously. And I put two purple belts asleep.
Yeah.
Like unconscious on the mats. And my professor at the time was just like, well, I think it's time. And I mean, we could do a whole episode on that because I actually don't think that should be a benchmark.
No.
For your purple belt. You know what I mean? Just because you start to get people's numbers.
For sure.
It is, you know what I mean? Like,
and styles make fights.
You know, it's like, and I was also, you know, fairly fresh out of regiment, 24 years old, super athlete.
Yeah.
You know, I had a lot of success with people right out of the gates being a 210 pound athlete.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you have great jiu-jitsu.
For sure.
You know? And I also think purple belt is something that, for me, you can get a blue belt if you show me that you're committed to the team and that this place is important.
You train hard for 2 years.
Yeah.
And you're probably getting a blue
belt. But if I'm going to tie a purple belt on you,
you better have good jiu-jitsu.
You better know jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. And it goes, I have always said this, I think purple belt is the most important promotion. Or the most important belt.
Well, you know what? Let's unpack this for a minute, because a lot of people listening are not jiu-jitsu people.
Yeah.
We're just having a jiu-jitsu conversation because we're jiu-jitsu guys. But the ranks in jiu-jitsu are white, blue, purple, brown, black. That's the adult ranks. The kid structure is different.
Yeah.
But you can expect 2+ years between belts.
At least.
Yeah. And the reason that I like that, because it turns it into
at a good academy.
It turns it into a 10-year journey, and it should be, because you can't become a black belt in 2, 3, 4 years. No. Now, BJ Penn did it. Congratulations. There's an anomaly, right? But even the guys that got it very quickly and even had success in competition, their own journey is something that still got shortchanged.
Right.
For you sure. know, because I got fast tracked to brown belt. I made brown belt in 5 years. And then I changed academies because I moved to Los Angeles, and Joao Assis kept me at brown belt for over an additional 5 years.
Yeah.
Making my journey to black belt over 10 years.
Yeah.
And when I look back on that, it's the best thing that ever happened.
Yeah.
You know, for those of you, there is a lot of military guys that listen because of what Fieldcraft is and who Mike is. A brown belt is the tab spec for the regiment.
Yeah.
You know, you've proven yourself. You're very good at your job, but you don't have a tremendous amount of leadership capabilities yet. And it allows you to focus inward and grow within yourself while still being someone that can mentor the privates, right? Once you become an NCO, once you become a leader, that's black belt stuff.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be able to invest in your jiu-jitsu for a substantial amount of time, looking inward, not worrying about what's going on outward.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've had my black belt now almost 2 years. And heck, it took me 16 years essentially to get to black belt. Because I was traveling around deploying with my one gi that I owned and a white belt, you know, to train at every deployment and with every team that I was training.
Yeah.
So I trained for like almost 8 years just wearing a white belt, not in an academy, but training under black belts. And, you know, some deployments, maybe there'd only be a purple belt there, but like training with guys who actually knew like real jiu-jitsu, not like fight club out in the sand.
Well, and if you move around like we did, just by the nature of our lives and our careers, if you're going to, again, a good academy, it doesn't matter how good you are when you show up, right? You show up, you better invest 1 or 2 years, and then you can be looking at a belt.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, then I opened up the Vita, and I'd been a blue belt under Thiago for 2.5 years by that time.
Okay.
Thiago gave me my blue belt after one. I trained for Thiago after 1 year of training with Thiago. He gave me my blue belt. But again,
9 years into jiu-jitsu.
And, you know, I remember him first time going, "Poor Greg, you know, white belt, bro. You know, you know, like, but I was a white belt, you know, like I knew base and posture and I had some grappling, but I didn't know technical jiu-jitsu, you know, like I knew some, you know, but.
Well, and also like when we were younger and you were using your athleticism and you were strong and you were fast. And I know you were, similarly to me, were doing like, you know, boxing and kickboxing and fighting and all that stuff. Man, part of jiu-jitsu is embracing the lifestyle.
Absolutely.
And that's where the magic happens too.
That's where the magic happens.
You know,
kick back a little bit, relax. Don't take everything so serious.
Yeah.
You know, like, and not everything's fight club to the death. Sometimes we can have fun and smile, you know, it's like, and that for me was what really changed my whole perspective on jiu-jitsu and honestly my skill set, because from like blue to brown, dude, every day in the academy was like, I had to go hard and I was getting burnt out and I was getting broken because there I'm not just there training twice a day, but I'm also teaching. So I'm there like 4 classes a day. You know, and that was a lot to manage and a lot to maintain. As soon as I was like, you know what? I'm just going to relax. And if I feel like rolling, I'll roll.
And have fun with it.
And if I don't, I won't. And if I want to roll light and play, I'll roll light and play. And if I want to play defense, I was like, I'm going to do whatever I want to do.
Yeah. And the thing is, you have to go into practice not every day. A lot of days I play it by ear, just see how I feel.
That's right.
But there are days when I'm like, okay, today you got to go hard.
Yeah, for sure.
Today you're not getting taken down one time, or you're not pulling guard one time, and you're going to take every one of your opponents down. That's you're going to wrestle them.
Yep.
Everyone's getting hit with blast doubles today because you have to hone that.
For sure.
But there's plenty of days I pull guard too, right? And one thing that I tell my students often when people are like, when people look at a martial art, right? Like what that means is it's something that can serve you in the realm of combat, but it doesn't always have to be serving you in the realm of combat.
Like a lot of stuff we do here, it can serve you in the realm of life.
That's right. And so when I'm playing light, or I mean, I've been playing lasso a lot lately because you show me some of those tricks, bro, I'll sweep anyone in the academy with that one trick that you show me, where you take your right foot and you put it on the far hip.
Yeah.
You shoot that hook through, you grab the leg, boom.
Bro, I mean,
look, right up to knee on belly position,
Eric
right?
Poso just won worlds.
There you go. You
know, like.
But so I tell people, I was like, well, people will ask me, how's that going to serve me in a fight though? I said, when we drive home and you pass the Crosswater basketball courts, and all the guys are out there playing basketball, do you pull over and ask them how that's going to serve them in a fight?
No, they're having fun.
They're having fun. Yeah. Like, we can just go out and do something that's fun. It's still teaching you movement, base.
That's right.
Transitions, reading your opponent's movements and movement patterns, watching your opponent's hips. That's like, all that stuff is still honed at a very high level, playing a more of a sport relaxed approach.
For sure. And I will say this, if for some reason I end up on the bottom of you in a street fight and you reach up to punch me, I'm going to swing and swim your arm past me so it's across my body. I'm going to dive underneath your knee and I'm going to sweep you into mount. And then I'm going to beat you to death. So it can serve you in a fight, whereas a three-pointer ain't going to help you in a fight, you know?
I do want, like, I turn 43 next month. My street fighting days are probably over.
Yeah.
I kind of hope they're not though. Just because, you know, who was I talking to about that this weekend? I was like, man, I was talking to Vic. I was like, imagine if you knew you're never going to get in another street fight again. There's almost a part of it. It's kind of like,
it's sad.
Oh man.
It's sad. Well,
but if I do, I want to, I think it'd be fun to, like, you know, try a lasso with a Carhartt jacket, especially if somebody's filming it.
Dude, you know? I was teaching lasso before I moved out here a couple of weeks ago. I'm teaching lasso in our advanced curriculum. And I said that to my guys. I was like, look, there are a bunch of my like good white belts on the mat. I said, if anyone hits this in a street fight, hits this lasso sweep.
Blue belt.
You get your blue belt. But it can't be staged. It's got to be on camera. It's got to be verified.
And yeah,
you
show
it to me, I'll give you your blue belt. And dude, we're in Utah, bro. Weather's going to start getting cold.
Yep.
Carhartt jackets are coming out. If you give me your sleeve, that is my arm now. You're not getting.
Well, and that's a good thing to bring up to people, because you still get people that are like, oh, I don't want to train in a gi because I want it to be for self-defense. Well, again, I live in Seattle. 90% of the year, people are in hoodies or coats and jeans or long or sweatpants. And I promise you, gi jiu-jitsu isn't, they don't put the gi on because they want to pretend we're a karate academy. They want to put the gi on because grappling at full speed, even with thick, robust gis, man, half my gis are shredded.
Yeah.
You can't train in normal clothes.
No.
And so the jiu-jitsu uniform was developed as a mechanism that can withstand the rigors of what we do on the mats.
For sure.
To mimic clothing. Exactly. That's why the rear naked choke is named the rear naked choke.
Doesn't involve the gi.
Because it's the event that somebody is not wearing clothes. I can choke you unconscious with your hoodie.
Yes.
You know, and even a lot of t-shirts you can choke people with.
Absolutely.
You know, and so don't misconstrue the fact that jiu-jitsu does use a martial arts uniform that some people infer is similar to taekwondo or karate, and they're not.
No, they're totally different.
But from an outsider's perspective that's not familiar with the differences, it might look like a silly, you know, people, oh, it looks like you're just wearing these silly robes. It's like, no. It's a uniform that can withstand the rigors of training. That's why we wear those.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, again, you know, kind of going back to here, the curriculum here, and I've spoken to a few people from the area, you know, and a lot of gyms, and I'm not saying that they don't have good jiu-jitsu. I'm not saying that their professors aren't great, but a lot of gyms, I don't know, I think have not stayed super true to jiu-jitsu. And, you know, sparring, they start on their knees or on their butts.
Dude, I saw
they don't drill or teach a lot of takedowns.
I got an advertisement via one of my social media accounts. It was a DVD and it said, learn takedowns from your knees. And I'm just like,
yeah, just shrug.
Wait a minute. Like, fuck,
what
dude.
Is this?
Like, yeah. No, every single rep of a takedown or takedown defense counts.
For sure. 100%.
You know?
And like Joao always says, you can't call yourself a ground fighter if you can't get the fight to the ground.
Exactly.
You dude. Know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, and that's why we have the sprung floor. But our fundamental curriculum rotates weekly. And every week is a new takedown, either wrestling or judo-based takedown. And it's the takedowns that really are kind of more self-defense work on the street. You're not dropping to your knees. You're not giving up your back, et cetera. You know, it's like osotogari, outside single.
So you're not teaching drop sayanagi?
We will teach drop sayanagi.
Bro.
But then I'll also teach side sayanagi.
I actually want to hone that a little bit.
Yeah.
So show me your tricks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, bro, again, like, so for people who are wondering what the fuck I'm talking about, the drop sayanagi is you drop your hips and you turn and you throw them like right over your shoulder.
Yeah.
But Rodolfo Vieira does that to everybody.
Yeah.
The best guys in the world.
Oh, yeah.
So it works.
Yeah, it works. You know? No, it for sure works.
Is your curriculum here going to mirror Vita?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we made some, we recently refurbished our curriculum a little bit because we found a couple of weeks were a little repetitive once you got to the ground position. But it's going to be the same thing, essentially a 10-week rotating curriculum.
You rotate weekly?
Weekly for the fundamental.
Okay.
The advanced rotates monthly.
All right. So I'm right in between you because I switched to a weekly curriculum. Mm-hmm. And then I found, and I'm not teaching the 101. I'm teaching the, you can call it advanced. I just call it the regular right. curriculum. But I realized quickly that 1 week is not enough time.
It's not enough.
You can't dissect half guard. In
no,
a week.
No, for sure not. For sure
and
not.
So,
and half guard is a month long
yeah.
curriculum.
So right now our curriculum's on a rotating 2 week.
Okay.
And I feel like that allows, at a minimum, yeah, I mean, fuck, you got a jiu-jitsu for 20 years before this stuff clicks.
Right.
So 2 weeks is certainly not enough.
Yeah.
But I feel like two weeks of exposure allows it to sink in for
they
people.
They get a lot of reps.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
get a lot of reps if they're
but then there's also a point of diminishing returns where if you're not engaging people enough. I can't do half guard for 2 months.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I taught what I wanted to teach, we would do nothing but takedown, mount to armbar. So, all right. So I mean,
year long curriculum.
Yeah, exactly.
Takedown, mount.
I told my students, I said, I'm just going to change our academy's name to Electric Armbars. And if you show up here, you're going to learn one submission, but you're going to be really
and
good at
that's
it.
That's it. That's
yeah.
it. Yeah. Yeah. No, a week is for our fundamental curriculum. So it's a takedown to a dominant ground position. And then either depending on the students that are there, either just maintain the ground position, the escape from that ground position, or a quick sub from that ground position.
Okay.
Super basic, super fundamental. We do that for a full week. And then our advanced is a month long. So like half guard is a month long curriculum.
What
whole month.
What do you try and incorporate per class as far as live rolling?
30 minutes.
30 minutes. Okay.
So I do.
That's quick, what we do too.
Yeah. Quick warm up. A lot of times I utilize the technique that we're doing, some form of warm up with that technique.
Yep.
And then 20 minutes of technique and drilling, and then 30 minutes of sparring.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the standard as far as my instruction is a little longer than yours, but we end with 30 minutes of sparring.
Right.
Because that is where the money is made.
Yeah, for sure. And I will say this, a lot of times I will put rules in the sparring. So a lot of times we do positional sparring.
Okay.
Especially like a new academy here, we're going to have a lot of new white belts. If we're doing, let's say we're doing side control to neon belly we're doing a sotogari to neon belly, right? To
yep.
side control.
Yep.
And then recover guard from side control. Like we're going to positional spar, start in side control your partner, get in side control. If he gets to mount and holds it there for 5 seconds, he wins.
Yeah.
If you recover your guard or reverse him or fight back up to your feet, you win. Switch it up.
Start over.
And we'll do a 5-minute round like that. Every time there's a win, they switch top to bottom. And I found that eliminates crazy injuries from the bulls in the China shop that
yeah.
don't know how to take each other down yet, don't know how to really break fall, don't know how to do leg sweeps, and they're kicking each other's knees out and shit.
Yeah.
And it limits those injuries. Yet still gives them full 100% like force on force sparring.
Yeah.
Within the constraints of what they learned that class.
Yeah, I like that.
So
I do something similar with rotation training, which yeah. I'm sure you guys do that too, yeah. where you just have a line and there's a certain amount of people on the ground. You're constantly rotating new partners. Start in a position, just like you spoke of. Winner stays in, loser rotates out.
Yep, absolutely.
And the benefit of that style is you get to fight 20 different body shapes in a night.
That's right.
As opposed to two or three.
Yep. Yeah. And we'll do the same thing. I'll line the mat up. Hey, give me two rows of three down, cycling from the left. Let's go. You know,
and bro, people love it.
They love it.
Like people get mad.
And they're gassed.
Yeah. Yeah. People be like, are we doing rotation tonight? I'm like, no, it's not on my curriculum this evening. And you just see like a dagger to their heart, dude. Oh, fuck, dude. Especially the kids, man.
Oh, yeah.
Kids love rotation training. Awesome.
But, you know, kind of going back to, you know, I know we preach jujitsu, and I think a lot of people think we're like jujitsu snobs. And maybe we are. I don't know. Are we?
Bro, if that's a term, then I'm certainly a jujitsu snob. Jujitsu has given me literally everything.
Oh, for sure. Look, and I mean, look at us now.
Yeah.
Like, I support my family with jujitsu.
As do I.
I am helping other people now support their family with jujitsu. Well, I'm hiring people full time.
And I tell people this, and it's this is very applicable to Fieldcraft's audience. I was in the Ranger Regiment for a long time. I did 14 combat deployments. I saw combat in the streets of Ramadi. I lived a hard life. Then I became a U.S. Marshal. I was on the special response team serving high-risk warrants all around the central districts of California, Los Angeles. And then I was a street cop for a while too. Like I've had a lot of experience, and every single thing that I did prior to running my jiu-jitsu academy fails in comparison to the amount of pride and just what it's done for me. When I look at who I am as a man and what I'm giving my community, everything else fails in comparison.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you fucking killed dudes in Ramadi. It means nothing. You know what means something to me now? Is watching a 5-year-old girl who shows up timid, no confidence, her posture's weak, and she steps on the mat and she's crying. And inside of 4 months, she's beating the crap out of other kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're setting people on a trajectory that's gonna change the rest of their lives.
For sure.
And a lot of times I reference the kids because you see that. It's more of a, you can observe it visually and watch their change. But make no mistake, I'm doing that for adults every fucking day.
We've talked about this. I like seeing the change in men our age.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Yeah.
I like seeing that fire come back. I like seeing those bellies come off.
Yep.
I like seeing them get their confidence back as fucking men. And it's rad. But, you know, again, just kind of going back to wrap this up is like, I think one of the reasons, and it's smart, and Mike is right. When you talk about preparedness, when you talk about survivability, when you talk about capability, I said it yesterday during the grand opening after the ribbon cutting or whenever the speech was, what we're walking around on is our Mark I Mod O weapon that we're given. This is our first issued piece of gear that we're born with,
yep.
This piece of flesh and muscle and bone. And if you don't take care of this weapon, I don't care what you add to it. If you're 60 pounds overweight and I get into a confrontation with you and you pull a gun on me, I'm going to take that gun from you and I'm going to beat you to fucking death with it. Because I can, because my body is a weapon first. My mind is a weapon first. Do I carry all the other stuff? Yes.
Well, and
we need to build resilient people.
And one thing that you said that I really appreciated, because I get pushback on this as well when I say these things on my podcast, and people are like, Craig, this isn't medieval times. We're not fighting with maces and swords anymore. It's not physical like it used to be. And if you don't think a gunfight is physically exhausting, you haven't been in a fucking gunfight yet.
Right. That's
and not, I'm not just talking about running up flights of stairs or bounding with body armor. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the hormonal dump that you get from being in a fucking high risk situation. You get fatigued fast.
Yes, massively.
Even when I was an elite athlete.
That's right.
So trust the men that have fucking walked this path before and experienced this. If you think you're in shape, wait till something fucking really, really traumatic happens to you. Your heart rate's going to spike. You're going to be fucking panting and you're going to feel fatigue, and you're not going to want to learn what being completely out of shape feels like in that moment.
Not in that moment.
Go learn it on the mats.
That's right. Go learn on the mats and increase that potential. And even going back to not life or death situations where it's like you're getting into a gunfight or getting robbed or mugged, but like you're out with your family camping and something catastrophic happens. Your wife breaks her leg, compound fracture of the femur. Can you get her to help? Can you walk out and get gas?
Or do you want to fucking take it down even a couple more notches? You and I leaving a restaurant and a lady's car was on its rim and the jack broke and fell over on its side.
That's right.
And they're like, we don't, what do we do? What do we? And we said, all right, check this out. And we both did a deep squat and we grabbed the fucking bumper and we deadlifted the car and they threw the tire on. Like just day to day life, you were going to be able to do more things and serve people better if you're in a body that works. That's a no-brainer. The only reason people want to push back against this is because they know they're lazy. Yeah. And when they see people not being lazy, that shines a spotlight on them.
For sure.
And people don't like that.
And it's hard. And it's hard. And one kind of one last thing is I had a client back in Louisiana that I did a lot of shooting training with. And he was massively overweight. He was 60 pounds overweight easily. And I told him, I said, you need to stop being lazy and get your ass in my academy and start training. And he's like, man, I'm just too out of shape. I need to get in shape first. It would take me forever to get out of shape. I was like, let me ask you this. I said, one, you said you need to get in shape first. Would you tell your kid that they need to get smart before you send them to school?
There you go.
No. And I said, secondly, you said it would take you forever to lose this weight and get back in shape. I said, did you eat a fucking Snickers bar last night and wake up fat as shit? I said, no, you didn't. It took years of you eating unhealthy and living a sedentary lifestyle. Now, I'm not saying that makes you a bad person. That doesn't quantify who you are now, but fix it. Yes, yeah. It is hard. Yes, it is arduous. Yes, it takes time. But what's the alternative? You're just going to keep getting out of shape and overweight and unhealthy?
Well, and when I hear people say, I'm going to get in shape first and then I'm going to start training with you, you're going to be shocked to hear that training with me will get you in shape.
Get you in shape.
You know?
Yeah. It'll help you lose weight and get you in shape.
And the one thing that I want to say to that is one thing that you say very often is if you're 60 pounds overweight and going up the stairs gets you out of breath, man, that's hard.
That's hard.
That's a hard way to live.
Tying
your shoes is hard. Just like getting on the jiu-jitsu mat and grappling one of us is hard. You don't get out of this life without hard.
No.
So you get, and the beauty in it, you get to choose your hard.
That's it.
What do I say? That's your statement, bro.
You want to be hard? You got to live hard.
Yeah.
If you want to be hard, you got to live hard. There's no easy button. There's no video game that does it for you. There's no podcast that you can listen to or watch. Although you should listen to this podcast and Endless Endeavor. there's no podcast. There's no documentary. There's no easy button. You want to be hard. You got to live hard. And you can fake the funk all you want. But if your card gets pulled that day, faking the funk ain't going to help you. So find your local jiu-jitsu academy. Swallow your pride. Be scared. Go sign up. If you're in the Provo, Salt Lake City area, come down to Fieldcraft headquarters in Provo, 1825 East Bay. Come meet us. Come check out the gym. Come sign up. Start building that capability now because there's no time like the present.
Awesome, man. I appreciate you having me, and I'm excited to be part of this, and I'm going to be down here all the time teaching jiu-jitsu.
Hell yeah. Love it. See you guys.